Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking about modeling flower thrips populations in blueberry fields in Florida. And there are two cultivars of blueberries that are grown commercially in Florida. The many varieties of the Rabbit Eye cultivar are grown mainly for U-pick and local sales, basically because they ripen later than the southern highbush blueberries, and up until recently, their key pest, the blueberry gall midge, was a huge problem for growers. The southern highbush blueberries, on the other hand, are grown for a highly profitable early season fresh market. In 2007, about 3.5 million kilograms were harvested from a little over 1,000 hectares at an average of $11 a kilogram or $5 a pound, and this is compared to about $1 to $2 a pound for most of the rest of the country for their fresh blueberries. Flower thrips are the key pests of southern highbush blueberries in Florida, and about 90% of the thrips captured in Florida blueberries are the Florida flower thrips Franklin yellow bispinosa. They're about a millimeter in length with bristle-like wings and what the literature calls punch and suck mouthparts because they have a single mandible that they use to puncture plant tissue, and then their maxillary stylets are modified into a feeding tube that they use to then suck out the contents of plant cells. They have a very wide host range. Fortunately for blueberry growers, they don't transmit any known TOSPO viruses to blueberries that we're aware of, but they do injure flowers in two different ways. They both feed on and oviposit in the developing flower tissue, and when the ovary becomes a fruit, this damage becomes magnified and can cause the fruit to be unmarketable, as you can see in the pictures. In terms of what happens in a blueberry field throughout the season, Arevalo found that flower thrips distribution and flower thrips numbers are highly correlated with what's going on with the flowers. So we have percentage of open flowers up here, and this is days after blooming down here, and then the number of thrips captured here. And you can see that the thrips population increases as more and more flowers become open. It peaks here, about 100% flowering, and then begins to decline as the flowers begin to drop their petals and develop into fruit. And thrips also have a tendency to form hot spots in the blueberry field, or areas of high population. And I wanted to see if I could model this using something called geostatistics, which is a set of tools for incorporating the spatial and temporal coordinates of observations in data processing. Basically, spatial variation among a set of sample points is modeled, and then the model is used to predict the values at unsampled locations. My objective was to model the thrips populations using these geostatistical methods so that in the future I could determine optimum trap spacing and also examine the effect of various environmental factors on the formation of hotspots. Before I can do that, I need to model them. And so my hypothesis is that the spatial variability in the flower thrips can in fact be modeled by semivariograms, which is a common geostatistical method. In terms of my sampling methods, I sampled over a 3-week period. The blueberry season in Florida, the flowering season, can be anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. This particular year, it was about 3.5 weeks long. And so I sampled from February 7th to the 14th, the 14th and the 21st, and the 21st to the 28th, using white sticky traps, 130 of them. 100 I spaced on a 50-foot or 15.24 meter grid, and 30 were placed randomly. And this is just a map of my field. The yellow dots here are the traps that were on a grid, and then the purple ones are the randomly spaced traps. They're all used in the modeling method. It was just easier to show them distinguished from each other in that way. Now, in terms of semivariogram modeling, what you do is you plot the lag, which is simply a term for the distance between sampling points, against the variance of that distance. And so what you get is a spatial trend up to a certain point where the farther away the points are from each other, the less spatial correlation that you have. And you get eventually to a point where there, no matter how far apart you get, the lack of correlation is not going to increase. It reaches a maximum. And this point, this distance, is called the range. And after this range, you have spatial independence. The height of this of the point where the data smooths out is called the sill, and this gives you an indication of the spatial the amount of spatial variance in your field. Basically, if you have a big sill, you have a lot of spatial variance. If you have a small sill, you don't have as much. And there's also something called the nugget, which is the semivariance at lag zero. In the ideal case, of course, you don't have any. If you have two sample points on top of each other, they're not going to vary at all. But in reality, it's a measure of your measurement error, and there is some nugget effect. So I constructed semivariograms for each week using STIS, which is a geostatistical software put out by TerraSeer. I ended up having 35 2.5-meter lags, and they were isotrophic, which simply means that the spatial trend did not change, was the same over all directions. It didn't change whether it was going this way across the field or this way across the field or in any other direction. And then I used an interpolation method called ordinary kriging, which basically takes those semivariogram models and gives you the population distribution or model of the population distribution in your field. So in terms of results, this was my semivariogram for that first week. This was about going from maybe 20-30% flowering to about 50% flowering or so. And you can see that there isn't a whole lot of a spatial trend. And there's a really big range, but in reality, this could just be measured as a flat line, too. And when this is used with the kriging method to model distribution, you can see a couple of hot spots starting to form here in the field. On February 21st, this encompassed the period of maximum flowering, and I got a beautiful spatial trend, basically, here, of like this. And when this was modeled into using the kriging method, you can basically see big hot spot here and down here, and then some smaller ones in other spaces throughout the field. And as I said, this was covering that period of maximum flowering. By February 28th, there was mostly petal fall and fruits beginning to develop. So this basically encompassed that period of falling thrips population. And you can see, again, there's not much of a spatial trend. It's a very abrupt one here, and that was modeled by a single point. And when we look at this flower thrips distribution, we can see the remnants of this hot spot here, but basically the distribution in the field is really leveling out at this point because there aren't a lot of flowers left. So in summary, the spatial variability of flower thrips in blueberries was modeled very well for that second week, but not as nicely for the first or the third week. And I think this may be that the distribution of thrips, as well as their numbers, may be strongly affected by the distribution of blueberry flowers. And what I mean by this is when you have, as in the first week and the third week, clumps of where there are blueberries flowering and spaces where they're not, you get high spatial correlation in those clumps, which falls off very quickly once you get away from those clumps. Whereas when there are blueberry flowers spread out throughout the field, you get a very nice spatial trend, as with the second week. And I'm hoping to model this better, and I think one of my problems with that first and that third week is there weren't enough sample pairs with lags below the actual range. The range of the February 21st semivariogram was about 11 meters, and my grid was about a 15-meter grid, and so the proportion of my sample points below that range was relatively small compared to the data set. And the one thing that I have from this data set that's very important is that it looks like traps should be placed at least 11 meters apart to ensure that they're collecting independent samples from each other. This is my first year of doing this. Obviously, I need to repeat this. I intend to do that, and I'm going to cut the size of my grid in half. I'm going to use a 25-foot, or about 7.5-meter grid of 100 traps, and then the 30 random traps. And I'm going to record also field observations of blueberry flower distribution to try and see if I can't really nail down that correlation. So I want to just acknowledge my major professor, Dr. Leibert, as well as my committee members, Drs. Funderburk, McSorley, and Dr. Grunwald, the Florida Blueberry Growers Association. Without their cooperation, I wouldn't have fields to work in. Some of their members allow us to do research on their field. And also the small fruit and vegetable IPM laboratory staff and students, without whom it would be impossible to be putting out and bringing in 130 sticky traps every week. And thank you all for listening. Any questions? The question was how many fields did I have for each sampling field, and it was a large area of a single blueberry field. The question is there a point at which there would be too many traps and it would be uneconomical to trap at that density? And the answer to that is yes. The point of the range of 11.4 meters is, especially for research, they need to be at least that far apart. But the nice thing is there's not this huge range that the growers have to worry about, and they can put a lot less traps and still get a good idea of what's going on in their field too. So now that definitely becomes an economic consideration for the growers. And the question is, can the distribution be affected by the field surrounding the field that the thrips are in? I would imagine it probably could be. I was actually in a corner of this blueberry field too, so I was bordered on like the top and one side by, you know, the extension of this grower's field, because they had a very large field. And on the other side was basically open field, because this particular field is kind of in the middle of nowhere in north central Florida. So that definitely could have an effect. I didn't look into that, but that would definitely be something to consider.